Is there anything you would welcome in the way of briefing to get yourself up to speed?
I think not. I think I'm fine, Tom.
Okay, very good.
Try me and see how I do.
All right, that'll be a pleasure and a challenge.
How many times has the Compensation Council existed? Met?
You mean this time?
No, over the years since it was created.
Oh, my dear woman, I did read that, too.
Joe Leake is from Duluth, correct, sir?
That's correct, sir. Thank you.
More fully identify yourself, please.
In what respect? I am Joe Leake. I was appointed by the governor. I know a Senator Jim Gustafson very well, who was the one that asked me. And who can say no to Jim Gustafson? I would challenge you.
You represent the 8th Congressional District.
That is correct.
Good. Nice to have you and with us. Sorry you missed last session.
Yes, I was very sorry.
The minutes which I haven't read yet, I'm sure, will bring you up to speed.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair? An item that staff neglected to do is to specifically put approval of the minutes on the agenda. The usual protocol is to ask at this meeting to approve the minutes of the previous meeting.
Okay. Have you had a chance to read the minutes? For those who have and would care to offer a motion, be entertained.
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval of the minutes.
Representative Erickson moves approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Ezel? Further discussion? If not, those in support. Favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion, minutes are approved. Okay, well, today we're going to hear testimony from Sandy Nairn and Mark Guillen, representing the State Bar Association, District Judges Association. Commissioner Ludeman has asked to offer some amplifying remarks, and then we'll move into discussion of possible recommendations. Sandy, Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the Compensation Council, my name is Sandy Nairn, and for the last 27 years, I've had the honor of representing the Minnesota District Judges Association before the Minnesota Legislature. I'm here today speaking on behalf of all of the state's judges, all 299 judges. There are 276 district court judges, 16 court of appeals judges, and 7 Supreme Court justices. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you briefly today about judicial pay. First, permit me to give you kind of a short background here on our judiciary. The typical attorney, when appointed to the bench, has been in public or private practice for about 18 years. Most judges now serving are in their mid-50s and have been on the bench for about 10 years. So when one compares the salary of a district court judge, it should be with attorneys who have had about 25 years of experience. An individual who decides to become a judge is making a major career change. It's not a stepping stone leading somewhere else, nor is it a decision to engage in public service for a period of one's life, as is common with legislators, constitutional officers, or commissioners. With only a few exceptions, once someone becomes a judge, they stay in the position until they retire. Most of those appointed to the bench expect to take a pay cut to serve as a judge. Unpredictability of salary increases and frequent periods of pay freezes were not expected, though, but unfortunately became the norm for most of the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. As you can see by the chart that's included with your materials, that's entitled Minnesota Judge Salary History. In the 1970s, judges' salaries were frozen for 4 years. The same thing happened in the 1980s. Salaries were again frozen for 4 years. This compensation council, your predecessor compensation councils, were actually created by the 1983 legislature in an attempt to eliminate the roller coaster ride of long freezes and then big catch-up increases in pay. The legislature realized that this erratic pattern was hampering the system's ability to attract the kind of lawyers who are successful in both the private and public sector and who are frequently paid substantially more than the state can offer judges. And for the next 8 years after the Compensation Council was created, it did work very well, and the legislature followed your recommendations and gave judges regular, incremental, yearly pay raises. During the 1990s, though, pay freezes for judges again became the norm. Judges received no raises at all in 1992, 94, 95, 96, and the first half of 1997. In fact, during the 25-year period from 1971 to 1996, judges received no pay increase at all in 12 and a half of those 25 years. During the last 20 years, though, other professional public employees have received step, merit, and COLA increases almost every year, with the exception of a few years when they only received the step and merit increases. A pay bill that finally broke this logjam was passed during a special session of the legislature in August of 1997. The 1997 bill gave judges a four-step pay raise for 1997, 98, 99, and 2000. In spite of those raises, though, Minnesota, which had ranked 16th in the country in judicial pay in 1985, fell to 33rd in the country by 2001. While such state comparisons should not be the determining factor for what the Compensation Council and the legislature does, they are an indicator of how we as a state support the institutions that serve us. At the time that judges ranked 33rd in the country, the governor's salary ranked 9th and the legislative salary ranked 12th. Thankfully, the 2001 legislature, acting upon this council's recommendations, passed legislation granting judges generous pay raises for 2001, 02, 03, and 04. The result is that a Minnesota judge's salary has now moved up to rank 18th in the country, a very major improvement. There is a chart included with your materials from the National Center of State Courts showing the most recent national survey of judicial pay done in April of 2004. The judiciary's goal is to maintain that position, which requires regular, small, incremental pay raises. I understand there have been a number of states who have raised judges' pay since that chart was put together. I don't know if it's changed our position yet or not. I haven't seen those final numbers. We would like you to consider the following additional facts in making your recommendations today regarding judicial pay. First of all, many public lawyers are still paid more than the trial judges before whom they practice. You will see on one of the handouts the salaries for several county attorneys, which have always exceeded and continue to exceed a judge's salary. In addition to the salaries, those local officials also have some very generous benefits that surpass judges' benefits. Additionally, all of those local official salaries increased in 2005, this year. For example, in St. Louis County, home of Representative Rugavina, the county attorney's salary, along with the salary of all county employees, increased 3% this year in 2005. Secondly, a large number of public attorneys are likely to have their salaries raised soon to also exceed the judge's salaries. At the present time, state law limits the pay of local employees to 95% of the governor's salary, or about $114,200, which I think this commission talked about at your first meeting. It appears that the legislature may repeal or at least significantly raise the cap this year. The bill to do that passed a House committee last week and is likely to pass a Senate committee today, as I understand it. If that happens, the compensation of many local prosecutors whose salary has been frozen at the cap for years will undoubtedly be raised to equal or exceed that of a trial judge if the judge's salary is not also increased. Thirdly, there is a growing disparity between judges' salaries and private sector pay. Mr. Guillen, who is here with me on behalf of the Minnesota Bar Association, will go into greater detail on that issue shortly. Fourthly, judges' workload has reached staggering levels in recent years, with criminal cases increasing by over 66% in the last 10 years. Additionally, the judge's job has become an increasingly difficult one, dealing with the most emotionally wrenching problems of domestic violence, child abuse and neglect, custody battles, methamphetamine and other drug cases, gang cases, and major sex and juvenile crime cases. Judges must also be able to handle a range of cases from conciliation court to difficult criminal cases to complex civil litigation. Fifth, Minnesota judges are very hardworking. Trial court judges handle over 2 million cases every year. The legislative auditor, who did an extensive audit of the court system in 2001, concluded that Minnesota judges carry the highest caseload of any comparable state, a caseload that is 49% higher than the average of other comparable states. Sixth, the job of a judge has become more and more dangerous. In your packet is an article from Saturday's Star Tribune that talks about this. The judge who is highlighted in that article, Judge Bjorkman, unfortunately just resigned from the bench a couple of weeks ago. In the last decade, the homes of some judges have been bombed. Judges have been physically assaulted, stalked, and harassed. Lawsuits are filed against them. Liens are being placed on their homes, and their families have been put in harm's way. You may have heard several days ago of a Chicago judge's family that was murdered execution style. She found her father and her husband dead in her home. Seventh, judges, unlike all other state employees, legislators, and constitutional officers, are severely limited by the canons of judicial ethics from earning outside income and are prohibited from practicing their profession while they're sitting as a judge. And eighth, years with no pay raise and then larger increases to compensate for that have an adverse impact on the pension fund. Judges who retire following a significant pay increase receive an enhanced pension benefit based on that salary when they've only contributed to the fund based on that salary for a short time. For that reason, pension fund directors have encouraged the legislature to give smaller, regular increases to employee salaries to even out the impact on the pension fund. In conclusion, the judiciary is requesting the following recommendation from the Comp Council this year. First of all, 3% pay raises effective July of 2005 and July of 2006. Previous Comp Councils have recommended that raises go into effect immediately for the judiciary in spite of the fact that your mandate is to make recommendation for just 2 years out. I think you did so in 1997, as I recall. There is no statutory restriction as there is for legislators with judges receiving pay raises before the next election. And more importantly, it's probably most appropriate for this council to consider more immediate raises for judges in light of the fact that no comp council met in 2003 that would have had the authority to make pay raise recommendations for 2005 and 2006. That's the only time, as I recall, that a comp council has never actually even met. Besides those raises, we hope that you will also recommend similar type raises for July of 07 and 08, either 3% or some kind of recommendation that judges receive at a minimum, a regular raise tied to an index, consumer price index, or the average raises given to other state employees for step, merit, and COLA increases. Previous comp councils have made this recommendation, and the judiciary has always supported and regularly introduced legislation to tie judges' salaries to the raises given to other state employees. But efforts to pass it into law haven't met with success yet. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'd like to introduce Mark Guillen now. Mr. Guillen is here speaking on behalf of the Bar Association and has also had the honor of serving on Judicial Merit Selection Commission and hopefully can bring you a unique perspective about the ability to recruit judges.
Mr. Guillen.
Thank you, Mr. Swain, and members of the council. I've been practicing law for 33 years now. Almost all of my work is related to litigation one way or the other. When I was a baby lawyer in Ramsey County, in the Ramsey County Attorney's Office, I was a prosecutor. I was really a whippersnapper, but what I remember is that the judges in Ramsey County in 1972 basically took the summer off. They would go to their lake homes or wherever they were going. There would be one judge available for special term to set bail for people, and if there was a hearing that absolutely had to be held, it would be held. But the judicial business of Ramsey County in those years could be telescoped into 9 months. The business of judging now is so radically different from what it was 33 years ago. The judges really work hard. I'm not sure I would have said this even 10 years ago, but right now they are just at the limit that somebody can handle competently. And I bet if you talk to them privately, they might say, I'm not sure I'm being all that competent on some of this stuff. It's like Lucy and Ethel on the assembly line, and the cakes keep coming at them, and they have to keep getting them into the boxes. In any event, they really work hard for their money. As Sandy said, I'm a member of the Judicial Selection Commission for Ramsey County. We are not looking for applicants who want to retire. And I think maybe 25 years ago, this was a job where a 50-year-old lawyer who wanted to kick back could go, and he wouldn't have to work very hard, or she wouldn't have to work very hard anymore. That is not the case anymore. What the commission is looking for is somebody who's ready to come in and do heavy lifting, at least at the trial court level. And that means we're looking for somebody who's at the peak of his or her game. We want somebody who's tried a lot of cases, who's got 15 or 16 or 20 years of experience practicing law, who's highly respected in the legal community, so that the lawyers who practice in front of this judge won't say, well, who the heck is this person? And we want a lawyer who's going to have 20 years to give to the profession, because most lawyers can't go in and sit on the bench and do a great job in a couple of weeks. It takes a while to become really good at it. The lawyers that we look at when we're recruiting, and we do recruit, we try to get people to apply, but it's not so easy. We're looking for somebody in the mid-40s, thereabouts, somebody with this experience, somebody who's highly admired, and somebody who's willing to give something up, because if you're that lawyer in private practice, you're going to take a pay cut. It's going to, depending upon where you're situated, it's going to be a big pay cut. I can tell you that we get almost no applications from Dorsey and Whitney and Fagree and Benson and Robbins Kaplan. But there are applications from lawyers in smaller offices, and they're still taking pay cuts. Now, the flip side of that is the lawyers who are applying to be judges out of the county attorney's office, the attorney general's office, the public defender's office. In many cases, they would, in fact, get a raise. In fact, in almost all cases, they'd be getting a raise, unless they're the elected county attorney. But what they're giving up is a sinecure of civil service, predictable hours, predictable practice. They don't, they're not under any extraordinary stress except when they're in trial. And what are they going to? They're going to a job where they make a little more money and where they have to run for an election every 6 years. I'm sure you're all aware of the case of Republican Party versus White, which has thrown a... Nobody quite knows where that's going to go, but it may very well mean that future elections for judges are going to be highly politicized. So it's hard to find highly qualified candidates to come in and to say, I want to be a judge. And I'm telling you that there are plenty of candidates. I'm sure you can say to yourself, everybody wants to be a judge. Well, not every really good candidate wants to be a judge. And that's what we're looking for on the commission. We're looking for the best possible candidates we can find. And I think that the benefits and the salary available to a judge right now is first rate. I wouldn't tell you that these judges are underpaid, that they are that they've been deprived. I think what Sandy described was that historically they have been underpaid, but the state of Minnesota has basically played catch-up. And I don't think the judges would come in here and say, my goodness, we're working like peons. But I think the point she makes is exactly correct, that they're entitled to know that they won't be on a roller coaster. They're entitled to know that there will be regular adjustments to their salaries so that they will not fall behind and then lurch forward and fall behind and lurch forward. Whether the 3% she's talking about is the right number, I leave that up to you. But if you want to attract the best judges, I think if they know that there's some certainty that they will not get left behind, at the same time they're probably making a sacrifice to take the job, I think these regular increases are the way to go. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I think I've said my piece.
Thank you. Mr. Lake, Dr. Lake, which would you prefer? Joe. Okay, Joe.
It would sound as though recruiting is difficult for all kinds of reasons. Are these people given any kind of mentoring? Are they helped to want to do it and learn how to do it well and grow into the job?
You mean after the appointment,
yes.
Sir?
Yes. Or as it's being, you say you talk about recruitment. You go out and try to find the right people. Are they helped, guided, given the source of value that they need to say, okay, I think I can do this job?
Well, let me tell you what I do personally, because I suspect everybody has his own method. What I call the judges in Ramsey County. There are two open spots in Ramsey County right now, and we're actually meeting, the commission is meeting on Wednesday morning to interview 15 people. But I call the judges when these spots open up, and I say, do you know any good youngish lawyers who you think would be a good addition to your bench. And if you do, would you talk to them about applying for this job? I don't think I can, as a member of the commission, go out and tap people on the shoulder and say, come and apply, and I'll help you through the process. But I know that other members of the commission do the same thing, sir. We try to get the best people we can to apply. I think we've got 15 interviews on Wednesday, and we probably had probably eliminated 15. We said 15 people really aren't ready. They haven't developed to the point where you'd say, okay, we'll take the time to interview them. And of these 15, because there are two spots, we'll probably send five to the governor to be interviewed. And, of course, he will make the final decision. But what we want to do is we want to say, no matter which of these five the governor selects, he really can't go wrong. But every one of these five candidates will be a good judge, not immediately necessarily, but within a short amount of time. Once they get on the bench, they do get judicial training.
That's what I want.
Yes.
Did you get judicial training, Mr. Stanek?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chair. I probably needed some more than most. But, you know, to the point that Joe raises, I know that in Hennepin County, as well as other counties around the state, when new judges are appointed to the bench, they're usually assigned a mentor judge who's a serious, you know, a more experienced member of the judiciary. There is ongoing opportunity for judicial education. As a matter of fact, I still participate in Hennepin County with new judges who are appointed. I go over and say, here's what I wish I knew then that I know now. So that's ongoing throughout the state.
Representative Bradley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions. First of all, on the private practice attorneys, I'm wondering how those numbers are arrived. Is that simply an average for all attorneys in practice, or how is it calculated?
I assume this is to Sandy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, the chart that is in there was prepared by Professor Egge, who has in previous years done a study for this compensation council. And I think he uses the Altman Wheel survey numbers that interview people across the country for this. So it's a national number.
It's national. Then what I wondered is, I guess, sort of thinking out loud, not necessarily asking for an answer, the last few years have some pretty remarkable explosions almost in the amount. Mm-hmm. But what I wondered was if you have a Cerisi kind of settlement or something like that where one's getting $200+ million, whether that might distort these numbers. Mm-hmm. The other question is about compensation and benefits. Ms. Naran, you made some mention of that, but just some idea in terms of the judges about what if there's any other compensation or what the benefits are like?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, there are no other compensation items per se that are added to their pay. They have a pension plan just like legislators and state employees, local employees. They have a defined benefit plan. They pay 8% of their salary into this plan. And in addition, they contribute at the Social Security plan also, which I think is currently 7.65% of their salary. So they're making a sizable contribution of their own paycheck into their retirement plan. I think the 8% that they contribute is higher than any other public employee contributes in total to their pension plan for those who are covered by Social Security. State employees contribute 4% of their paycheck. PERA employees contribute 5.1% of theirs. So judges at 8% are higher than most other plans. Compared to judges in other states, which I've looked at several times in recent years, I think there are only four states that require higher contributions from judges out of their own paychecks to go towards their pension. And in all those states, the pension plans are much better for judges, so they're worth paying more money for. Judges contribute 3% of their own paycheck also into their own post-retirement health savings account. That's their money. It goes into their health savings account. All public employees, I think, have the ability to do this on a group basis. All the judges had to vote for this because it had to be uniform for everyone in order to meet IRS regulations. So they are saving for their own post-retirement health costs out of their own paycheck also. They receive health insurance like other public employees. I don't know what else. Maybe Sue can help me here. Is that about it? There are no other side benefits that are different than what other state employees get.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Recovino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, and, you know, I've been around here now for 19 years, and it's difficult for all three branches of government to get pay increases. But, and I wish Senator Scheid hadn't left, because she's an attorney and I'm sitting next to one right here. But, you know, there's usually between 35, 45 attorneys in the 201 member body of the legislature. And Ms. Nearing, if you look at, you know, the sheet that we received for this meeting, they've fared quite well, I think, in the last few years. In 95 and 96, they were frozen, and I'll just use a district court judge's salary at 83.5 approximately, but in 97 they got a raise, in 98 they got a raise, in 99 they got a raise, in 2000 they got a raise, in 2001 they got a raise, in 2002 they got a raise, in 2003 they got a raise, and in 2004 they got a raise. As a matter of fact, the 2001 special session bill you referred to actually set their salaries for 01, 02, 03, and 04. So I think that the comp, and I believe another attorney in the legislature is walking in too, so if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, I've heard, you know, that it's hard to try to get attorneys to run or to become a judge. But every time there's an opening in my district, my phone's ringing off the hook, and that judicial legislative separation of state seems to not matter, because then the judges are talking, or the people that want to be judges are talking to me all the time. And I believe that it was just within recent history that, unbeknownst to most of us in the legislature, you had to be an attorney to become a judge, which then restricts people from running. And there probably are a lot of very intelligent people that are learned in the law, as the previous way it read. Anybody could run for a judgeship if you were learned in the law. That now are restricted because that happened. We have three branches of government, and two of them haven't been treated very fairly around here recently, but certainly that case cannot be made for the judicial branch. And I'm glad Senator Scheid is back, because she can defend the attorneys if she chooses to. But, you know, the governor now has been locked in since 1998 at $120,000, and his wife is only bringing in $2,000 less as a district court judge. So it's hard for me to say that the judicial branch hasn't been treated fairly. I think the legislative branch and the executive branch of government need some looking into, too, because it gets to be dangerous when just one branch of government seems to be able around here to make sure that their compensation is keeping up with the times and the other two haven't. That's not to say that I don't think they have a difficult job. Certainly they do, but legislators and members of the executive branch of government have a difficult job at times also. And so, you know, I'm hoping before we jump in and rescue these judges in the judicial branch, that we take a serious look at what needs to be done for the legislative and executive branches around here, because we've basically been locked in since 98 and 99, and as I said, the history is right there. The facts can't be disputed. There's been pay increases over the last, that have been voted on since 97, where the last 7 years we've had increases. And Ms. Nearing, as a good lobbyist as you are, I do have to mention to you that legislators pay 9% of their salary and Social Security, not 8. And that no. Police and fire pay, I believe, 11% or 10.5. So there are other branches that or other folks in this system. And if I made $118,000, I'd put 5% aside for my health care in the future, because I'd actually have some money left over to pay bills at the end of my monthly cycle. So.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Recovino. And I guess you've kind of explained why we're here, is to take a look at the salaries of the governor, constitutional officers, and
that's
the legislature.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, good. We're on the same page.
Mr. Chair.
Please.
Can I just briefly respond to Mr. Recovino? very briefly. Mr. Iacovino, you are correct about the salary, about the percent that are contributed to those pensions. I mentioned that judges were at 8%, the highest with those who are coordinated with Social Security. Legislators pay 9% but don't pay Social Security. Law enforcement pay 9% but I'm told do not pay Social Security out of your legislative pay.
Chair.
Did that change?
Would you notify House Administrative Services
okay.
That I'm not supposed to be taking?
I'm sorry if I've misspoke. That was my information, is that you didn't contribute to Social Security.
Thank you.
On the point that Mr. Iacovino made, I hope I have not given the impression to the Comp Council that judges are not satisfied with the raises that have been given by this Comp Council and the legislature since 1997. We are extremely grateful. That is why, for the first time, they are not asking for any significant raises other than regular small incremental increases every year. There is no doubt that the governor's salary needs to be significantly raised and hasn't. It's even more important to raise legislators' salaries. You won't get any argument from any of us that your salary needs to be increased, but you're the only one who has the power to do that, not the courts. So we hope you do take care of those issues. They absolutely need to be and need to have more attention given to them for more significant raises than the judges need at this point.
Any other questions? Mr. Stabler.
Yes, Sandy, I have a question. What is the ultimate benefit from the defined benefit pension program, and what does the state put in to that pension program?
Mr. Chair, the defined benefit plan is the judges have what's a 3.2% multiplier for every year of service. That is multiplied times the number of years that they have served as a judge, and then is multiplied times their high five salary. So it's a similar formula to what other state employees have. Their multiplier is slightly higher in recognition of the fact that they serve in public service for fewer years because they come onto the bench in their mid-40s or early 50s. So that is the formula in which it is calculated.
And the other was the percent or the dollar amount that the state contributes to that defined benefit pension plan.
Right now, the state is contributing 20.5% of the judge's salary to the plan. And the reason that they are doing that now temporarily is to pay for unfunded liability that accrued during the first 16 years that the judge's plan was in existence when no contribution was made by the state, the employer, on an ongoing basis. That amount will undoubtedly sunset and go back to be about the same as the judge's contribution once the unfunded liability for those 16 or 17 years from the when the judge's plan was started, when that unfunded liability is gone. It is estimated that that will be by 2020 or maybe sooner if there are investment earnings to reflect that. But that is why they are contributing significantly more. It's to make up for the unfunded liability because the state wasn't making any employer contribution from 1974 until 1990.
Ms. Marley?
One of the other aspects of salary and sort of efficiency in the court system is the turnover. Do you have any information on judicial turnover for us?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Marley, back in the 80s, I think there was more turnover in the judiciary. I think there were more judges, anecdotally at least, who left the bench in order to go back to private practice because of the pay issue and maybe some other personal reasons. I think that's happening a little less frequently now that the judges have been getting regular increases, and it hasn't seemed to have been as much of a problem, but there are still judges who have been leaving the bench for a number of reasons. I can think of about half a dozen in the last 10 years who have left for financial reasons. Interestingly, several of them came back to the bench in later years when they were able to do so.
Mr. Stabler?
Yes. What is the health insurance relationship as far as the judges are concerned? How much of it does the state pay? How much do they pay?
Mr. Chair, I think the judge's health insurance plan is exactly the same as it is for all other public employees, and I don't know all the details. Do they have options of different plans, or is it no? No. Commissioner Ludeman is telling me no. They have the exact same plan that all other state employees have. No difference between.
If you want to know more details about that, Commissioner Ludeman is going to be appearing before us. Any other questions?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Iacovino?
I just can't keep quiet. Excuse me. You can come over here. But to say that, Ms. Nearing, that the pension plan of the judicial branch is similar to any of the other pension plans is absolutely not true. In fact, no one has a multiplier anywhere near what they do. No one has a 2.5% match. Nobody. The MSRS is in trouble this year. PERA is in trouble, members. They're coming around looking because the pension plan, the only one that's actually near funded, and I see Mr. Shepherd up there, I believe, is TRA. And we have Minneapolis Teachers Fund that's in trouble, and, you know, I don't see the state rushing in to say that they're going to kick in a bunch of money because it wasn't funded properly. My understanding is that the two funds are going around trying to convince the people that contribute to up their contribution, and that the local units of government and the state, in the case of MSRS, would match it. But I know of no plan where you have an 8% contribution and, you know, 20.5% from the employer or anywhere near that. And I know of no other pension plan that has a 3.5% multiplier. I think the legislators and the police is the next closest at 2.5%, if I'm not mistaken. So that's about 33% better in my, where I come from anyhow. 2 to 3 is 33%.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, judges have a 3.2% multiplier. That's about 0.2% higher than law enforcement, which is at 3%. So it is slightly better. I don't deny that they have a slightly higher multiplier than other public employees, but they're not that far apart from law enforcement and some of the other groups. 0.2%, that's all. As for the contribution to the fund, as I mentioned, the only reason the state is making such a huge contribution as the employer to the judges' fund is to make up for the 17 years when they made no contribution whatsoever. So most of that is unfunded liability that will disappear as an employer's contribution once the fund reaches full funding in 2020. Then the employer's contribution is going to go back down to match the contribution made by the employee. It will be the same. So a good chunk of the money that the state is contributing is to pay off the state's liability for not having made any contribution for all those years. That's why the state's contribution is so high, and that's the only reason.
Thank you, Ms. Nearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? If not, thank you. And also, Mr. Guillen, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. My understanding, the House has session at 3. 3 o'clock. Okay, let's see what we can accomplish. What time then will it be necessary for you to leave?
3:10.
Okay, that gives me a little more leeway. Commissioner Ludeman from the Department of Employee Relations appeared before us at our first meeting and has requested an opportunity to offer some additional information. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity. It is not my job here today, certainly, to refute anything about the testimony that you heard today specifically. I think we will talk very briefly about Representative Rukavina's concern about equity, although I'm not sure we would perhaps share the same solution. But we will talk about that briefly. So if I could just, for 2 or 3 minutes, Mr. Chairman, talk about reiterating and clarifying the governor's position on the role of the Compensation Council. First of all, he certainly appreciates the members' participation in this council and is anxious to see what its recommendations may be. I would remind you, though, as Commissioner of Employee Relations, just as a reminder of how the executive branch employees are treated, how we deal with them. We work hard to maintain a competitive compensation, always by study, by comparison, ultimately by negotiation and in an administration of the salary plans in either the plans or in the contracts negotiated. For statutory salaries, however, it's the governor's belief that no study, no comparison, no negotiation or administration avoids the fact that these decisions are in context of a still very serious budget problems. Not a slow growth budget, not a revenue neutral budget, but a budget out of balance in need of balancing. Low on the list of needs in this budget, of these budget choices, is the compensation of elected and appointed officials. when there is not sufficiently dramatic evidence, at least, that recruitment and retention is a serious problem. The governor will not assume that all things go back to normal after the 2005 session. Wage inflation cannot be any more assumed by 2009 than the price of gasoline, the cost of health care, or the balancing of the federal budget. For these reasons, the governor is recommending to this council not to recommend compensation increases for any branch of state government required for consideration by this council, governors, other constitutional officers, agency heads, state judges, or the legislature. Mr. Chairman, if anybody had any questions, I'd be glad to answer. Otherwise,
certainly.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I do. Commissioner, may we presume from that then that if we didn't have the budget deficit, the governor would be supportive of increases? I mean, I understand what you've had to deal with in terms of state employees, and that's been tough. And it's been tough for us to ratify those contracts, but the harsh reality of the budget. Is there a point where the governor, does the governor acknowledge that some of those salaries may be outdated and need adjusting, but is he saying we just can't do it now?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scheid, I think that's the best way to put it. We simply can't. That doesn't mean that we've ignored salary compression issues that do exist. Some of them are real, but they're not urgent, that relate to the recruitment and retention of qualified people for any and all of these positions.
Commissioner, in your first appearance, you urged restraint.
Right.
Now you're urging nothing.
Well,
is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I think restraint, I was trying maybe to be a little too polite. Restraint meant...
I see.
Restraint meant no increases.
Well, what by statute we're instructed to do, as I understand it, according to material that's been provided, the council is instructed by statute to consider the amount of compensation paid in government service and the private sector to persons with similar qualifications, the amount needed to attract and retain experienced and competent persons, and the ability of the state to pay the recommended levels.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, we're instructed to look ahead, weigh things, and then make an independent judgment, as I understand it, presumably as much as possible unrelated to political reality.
Sure. Well, Mr. Chairman, and the governor is not dictating the decision of this council. He's telling you what he believes should happen. He's recommending a recommendation by you. But those two charges of this council, to look at the retention issue and to look at the ability to pay for those in combination instruct the governor that this is not a time to look at statutory compensation increases.
Even though whatever action we would take with reference to constitutional officers and legislators would become effective after the next election at a time when who knows who's governor.
Mr. Chairman, that's a bit of the rub. No one knows what the next budget forecast will look like or the next budget would be prepared, whether it would be in balance or have excess revenue.
Surely. Questions?
Well,
Representative Recovina?
Mr. Ludeman, I've seen, I'm a little confused, and so Senator Scheid asked it, and I missed the first meeting, but you're saying the governor says because of the budget crisis, he doesn't recommend it. He's saying we shouldn't up his salary or ours on this council today.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, not only that, but because we believe that there's not compelling recruitment and retention issues existing relative to the current salaries either. That, in combination with the budget, are instructing the governor that he doesn't believe this is an issue that needs action on now or in the immediate future.
Well, it's puzzling to me, Mr. Chair and members. I've seen a number of my former colleagues, I can just think of three right off the top of my head that are walking around here as assistant commissioners, all of a sudden it got defeated or didn't run last time, and there's money. Those are some pretty hefty salaries, and there's money
and Representative
gone for them in this budget.
Certainly adequate to recruit qualified incumbents for that job.
So they're qualified once they leave here, but not qualified while they're sitting, is your statement, for the record.
Mr. Chairman, they certainly could have probably stayed in the legislature had they desired, several of them.
I think they got beat.
one or two got laid off, I think, yeah.
One of the purposes for the initiation of this council was presumably to avoid the roller coaster effect of long periods of nothing and then abrupt changes that perhaps the public finds a little more difficult to understand. And, of course, we're right back at that again for reasons that are partially understandable, but to do nothing again just extends the flat period of no action in reference to salary of the governor and other constitutional officers since, what, 98? And we're looking prospectively to 07, so that's at best 9 years now, and to do nothing would extend it at least another two.
That's true. Mr. Chairman, I can only remind you that this, the recommendations of this council would go to the legislature.
Yes.
The legislature would have to take those recommendations and fund those recommendations for them to go into effect. It would take the passage of a bill, and I think it's just fair for you to know that what the governor's position is on that.
Yes, sir. Mr. Shaver?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious, as I look at the chronological timeline and thought through the briefing materials, recommendations from the 99 and 01 cycle were not taken up, and I've been away for a while. But if you think of economically what was going on in 99 and in the first half of 01, things were exuberant. And
irrational, what do you call it? Irrational exuberance?
And so if you think of a time to act on recommendations, you would have thought, since it required legislative action, that the time to do it was in flush times. And I'm just curious, you know, out of what happened.
Mr. Stabler and then Representative Riccovino.
I would have some conjecture based on my experience in the investment world that the craziness of the stock market in 98 and 99 was not indicative of all of the economy. In fact, the economy of this country was in very dire straits in those times, although the stock market was hotter than a pistol. And the fact that you've got some 50 companies' stock prices running through the ceiling doesn't make the whole of the economy of the country run very well.
I guess I'm in the same business. And had, you know, if you look at any one of a number of indices, whether it's real estate, commodities, other aspects of the economy, I don't think anyone would, any thinking person would make the case that NASDAQ would be a representative barometer of the world. But I just think back to relative flush times, and you know, I can't remember when the last check I got from the Department of Revenue was, you know, my rebate check. They're relatively flush times in state government. So I'm just curious, what happened?
Representative Riccovino.
Well, that was the economist spin. I'll give you the political one. You have a new turnover, and you have a new majority in the House of Representatives, and I'm sure the first thing they didn't want to be seen was that, you know, Representative Swigum is the new Speaker of the House, and a change of party is going to give up themselves a pay increase. So it enters into political. You know that, Representative Shaver. You were here long enough. The political, the politics of it enters into it, and you've got a change in leadership, and they're not going to do that. That's not going to be one of their first duties as a change in leadership, is to give themselves at least a vote for a pay increase, which is going to be used in the following election against them. And that's the reason we're here, and that's the situation we face.
How about the 01 cycle, though? That would account for the first cycle. The 01 cycle, again, the economy was in relatively good shape. We were getting revenue rebates.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaefer, we picked up a seat.
Senator Langseth, and then Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chair, just a short time ago, I was talking to a guy who I thought would make a very good legislator in the future, and he was very, very interested. And I asked him if he would be running in the future, He said, "Are you kidding? I couldn't take the $20,000 cut in pay." There was the state senator made a comment here about a month ago I thought was pretty good. She said, "Legislative compensation should be good enough so people can serve, but not so good that it's the reason they serve or the reason they stay." And I think we're kind of on the low end of that right now.
Thank you. Mr. Jones?
Mr. Chair, I would like to get Mr. Littleman's thought. In the previous testimony, was stated that the trial judges were being challenged to find good talent because of the level of compensation. How is that affecting the state as far as other agencies from a talent standpoint and ability to recruit, with the reasons of compensation being driven by the recommendation that you're making? I appreciate your comments, in reference to the talent.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jones, we continually monitor agency requests for exception to the administration of contracts or plans. We don't have an extraordinary different amount of requests for anything exceptional. So, and we're able to recruit the kind of people that agencies feel are able to do, whether it be project management, employee management, the kind of, at least at those levels, the IT system has certainly settled down, so our IT recruitment is not urgent. We're able to recruit and retain our information technology people. Claims administration, the kinds of the folks that oftentimes you would see the kind of taking of employees. The only one that you may have read about recently is the Department of Revenue at the auditor level, and we are looking at that to see if we are able to retain.
This is consistent with your testimony from our first meeting, but I think, as I recall, you at the same time recognize that today's status does not necessarily predict the future, which is what we're trying to explore.
That's correct. That's correct.
Mr. Jones?
One follow-up question. Outsourcing and consulting is becoming an increasing factor in government. Is that a de facto way of saying that we don't have the talent to do it in-house any longer, so therefore we're choosing constructing contracting strategies that allow us to go outside and buy the talent on a contractor basis, or is that a different question being answered?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jones, in Minnesota, that is difficult to do, and I don't think there's any agency in any headlong rush for outsourcing of the kind of, at least for the consulting talent that you're talking about. It's not going on in Minnesota state government. Maybe other local governments, but I think even law is difficult to.
Representative Bradley?
Have a lot of outsourcing there.
Excuse me.
Mr. Chair, because we could get called out for a vote, I know that in our discussion there's an idea of somehow tying the legislative salaries. I think as you look at this, and Representative Rukavina is right, it probably isn't necessarily even partisan. The rational judgment as far as handling does get very politicized for whatever the reasons may be, and doesn't necessarily make sense in terms of what ought to be done, be competitive, all those other kind of forces. And it strikes me, I'm not particularly wild about the idea of tying a percent to the governor, because the governor's still voting, that still could easily get caught up. But I am sort of interested in the notion, because if you look at the history, the Compensation Council's recommendations have not been very outlandish. I mean, if we were where the Compensation Council had recommended over these past 5 or 6 years, I think most reasonable people would look at it and say, that's not bad, that's pretty reasonable. What I wonder is whether we ought to have whatever the legislation or the mechanisms are to respect the Compensation Council and to actually let those go into effect and perhaps have some sort of a safety valve, I mean, which would require specifically legislation to take action to stop the recommendation as opposed to having to ratify. I think the only way we'll get around this is, frankly, if we give more authority, if the Compensation Council is construed not to be sufficiently set up with the right representation, that's another story. But it appears as though it's been pretty objective, relatively balanced in its recommendations, and I would suggest that we consider moving forward the idea of empowering the Compensation Council more than it currently is.
That's a matter the legislature has at its disposal, doesn't it?
Could we defer that
discussion for a moment until
I only said it because we might get called for a vote or something.
Okay. Well, following Commissioner Ludeman's testimony, we're going to begin to discuss whatever is in our mind. Is anything further for Commissioner Ludeman? Thank you, sir. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Swain. And this is not for Commissioner Ludeman, but to remind Representative Rukavina that in 1999, in state government finance, we made these decisions that increase the agency heads and the constitutional officers, the Minnesota Zoo. Those we made in state government finance, and it was a compromise between the Senate and the House. I served on that conference committee, and we thought we did a really good job in making those positions kind of the focus of the 99 state government finance bill, in that we weren't accepting, the legislature was not going to appropriate the dollars for all the other recommendations. But we did make those changes, and it was agreed upon in the conference committee.
Thank you. The remaining item on our agenda is council discussion regarding possible recommendations. Mr. Stanek.
Well, Mr. Chair, assuming the other members are fine with this, what I'd like to do is to make a motion so we at least get something in front of us for discussion, and if it gets a second, I guess we can discuss it, but at least to get something out there. Would this be appropriate time to make such a motion?
Why not?
All right. First of all, I think, as the discussion has been noted, the Compensation Council, as Representative Bradley indicates, has over time made recommendations that at the time were relatively modest in terms of regular incremental increases for executive branch officials, members of the legislature, members of the judiciary. I can fully appreciate the fiscal constraints and concerns that the state has at this time, but when I look at the constitutional officers and the number of years that have passed with no increase, the legislative branch of government, the number of years that have passed with no increase, I think that we have to make some recommendation in this area to get those up and to move them in the right direction. I think that we've generally got it right with making modest incremental increases with the judges. I think the challenge is now for the executive branch and the legislative branch to move in that direction. So when I thought about trying to put together a motion, I looked at the information that Mr. Hubinger presented, and I did notice, as someone who has been involved in and around this compensation council process since the late 80s, actually, if we took the recommendations of the previous compensation councils, which at the time were rather modest and incremental, the governor's salary under that proposal would move to $149,196. The realist in me accepts the notion that that is probably an increase that I don't know if it would have support amongst this council, and I suspect that it may run into some problems at the legislature as well. So what I did is I looked through the salary spreadsheet, and I picked for the governor's salary the lowest amount, which would be the third row, which would take the governor's salary, if it had been adjusted by a nationally based CPI, the governor's salary would be $137,000. And the first part of my motion would be that we increase the governor's salary to $137,869, which would track that index of inflation. With regard to legislators, I would propose that we recommend that legislative pay be increased to match 33% of the governor's salary. And with regard to the judiciary, I would note that the Compensation Council did not meet last cycle, that we propose a 3% increase in 05 and 06 for judges, and since we've chosen the nationally based, or for purpose of this motion, I've chosen the nationally based measure of inflation, CPI, that in 07 and 08, the years which we are to make a recommendation, that judges' salaries also be increased by that measure of inflation. So to summarize, the governor's salary to be increased to $137,869, legislative pay tied to 33% of the governor's salary, 3% increases for the judges in 05 and 06, and then tied to the inflation index for 07 and 08, which are the years we're to make a recommendation.
Understood? There's a second?
Yes, second.
Mr. Jones seconds. Been moved and seconded. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rakovina.
Sure. Mr. Stanek, what would be in the discrepancy, and I guess I would call it that for lack of a better word, between the Chief Justice and the Governor's office by the time that 137.869 is implemented? What would be, under your motion, the salary of the Chief Justice?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I have not calculated out what the impact of those changes would be, but currently the Chief Justice's salary is at 146.920, and under my motion, the Governor's salary would go to 137.869. So I don't know exactly what the spread would be, but clearly the Chief Justice's salary would be in excess of the Governor's salary under this motion.
Mr. Huebinger has the number.
Mr. Chair and members, if the Chief Justice received a 3% increase, the salary would be 151,328 the first year, and in the second year it would be 155,868.
This is assuming 05 and 06 adjustments for the judiciary.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Huebinger, under the Stanek motion here, then would the governor's salary would remain at 137,869 and be indexed in 06 then, according to CPI National or CP? Yeah.
I guess my motion was silent on that. But
yours was silent on 08.
Correct.
Is that because the council then meets again?
No. I think it would be an open question for us as to whether we would want to make a recommendation. If the governor's salary were changed for our recommendations for 07, do we make some type of recommendation for what should happen in 08? As I understand, Mr. Chair, that would be within our purview to make that recommendation.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I have a question about your recommendations on the judiciary. Inflation adjusted? Now, whatever is recommended here is presumably, well, it's supposed to be considered by the legislature and becomes effective only if they do something, which in the past they've done as proposed a couple times and have adjusted it most times. How would they act on the inflation adjustment? Because that's not defined.
Mr. Chair and members, a previous council recommended a different automatic inflator that tied judicial increases to the average of across-the-board increases for state employees. It would not be difficult, I don't believe, to draft language in an appropriations bill that would be very precise about how that calculation would be done and by whom.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rakovina.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Stanek, as much as I like you, I have to oppose your motion, and I'll tell you why. It's because the way I'm interpreting your motion right now, which what you've added there, I don't believe that you've gotten the executive branch of government on equal footing with the judicial branch, and I think we have to address that. Serving on the other legislative committee on salaries, I can't remember the proper term for it, Mr. Huebinger, help me out. I mean, we're constantly having to vote on whether the nurse anesthetist in Moose Lake can make more than the governor and everything else. And, I don't think we're helping the situation with those types of problems by bringing the governor up to 137 and then in the same breath, the Chief Justice would be at 155,868, whatever it is.
Mr. Chair?
Dr. Leake?
I don't know if this was addressed at a previous meeting, the first meeting. I have a hard time getting my arms around the aggregate number. I'm hearing the 2% or CPI raise or 3%. On an annual basis, if we were to give all the people involved here a 2% increase, what kind of an aggregate number are we looking at? I just can't figure that out in my own mind. And maybe that's not known.
Well, there are 201 legislators. There are how many constitutional officers? Five?
Four. Well.
Pardon me?
Depends on whether the lieutenant governor continues as a agency head.
There are four of us.
Five.
Well, there are five. And the judiciary, how many judges did you say?
Quite a few.
About 300.
Pardon me?
299
judges. So I'm not sure how you put that together, sir.
Yes, I understand it's an awkward question, but the governor must have some reason why he thinks we shouldn't talk about giving any raises. Is the number going to be so awesome to the state that everybody shudders or says there's that at the time of fiscal imbalance and deficit, we're crazy to be considering a major move? I guess is the thrust of my question.
Anybody want to try an answer to that? Don't hear anyone. Mr. Stabler.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I had asked last meeting if we could get some kind of an impact statement as to if we were to give the governor a $10,000 raise, how would the trickle-out effect be to the remainder of the various people who are percentage-wise dictated by the governor's salary and that type of an impact. So I think that's essentially the same kind of a question. So what is the impact on our budget?
Well, I'd be totally speculating, but Commissioner Ludeman might have an answer to this, but it would appear on the basis of the current governor's position that there would be little, if any, impact on salaries for agency heads. And depending upon who's governor in 1907...
Or 2007.
Pardon me?
2007.
2000 and... What did I say?
19.
Oh, well, and see, I spent most of my time, spent more time than the rest of you did in the 20th century, so I got some reason to be excused there, I hope.
What I had thought last time that possibly Greg was going to be able to ascertain such a number as that for us for this meeting.
Well, it would be somewhat speculative. Would you care to offer something?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Stabler, the governor's salary serves as a maximum for a large number of positions, but it doesn't actually drive very many salaries directly.
And it drives the four other constitutional officers.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And then there, I believe, are two agency heads whose salaries are set as a direct percentage of the governor's salary, the state lottery director and one more. But otherwise, the appointing authority, the agency heads, have to make decisions about even if the governor's salary is increased, if another employee's salary is going to be increased just because it can be.
Mm-hmm. I assume if the legislature does not repeal this law that becomes somewhat controversial and limits other local officials to 95% of the governor's salary, if the governor's salary went up, even if he didn't take it, then there would be more latitude for increasing other salaries, and I don't know how you'd begin to quantify that. It'd be pretty speculative.
It might not be a doable thing. It's just that there was a persona about the concept that the governor must have a feeling tone is high risk for our state to have to address.
I see. Mr. Stanek? Then Senator Lenz.
Well, I was just going to respond to Representative Rukavina that I think that the judiciary would still be in sync with the governor's salary because my math isn't great. That's why I became a lawyer, I guess. But I think that all of the trial court judges, the chief judge of district court, all of the court appeals judges would still be under the governor's salary under this proposal, even if the governor's salary went to 137,869. The only members of the judiciary, I think, who would be at or above the governor's salary would be the chief judge of the Court of Appeals, the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court, and the Chief Justice. So the 299 district court judges would still be underneath the governor's salary under what I had proposed.
Thank you. Senator Langsmith?
Well, Mr. Chair, if you're talking about the legislature, let's just suppose the Senate was raised $10,000 a year. That's $670,000, which you couldn't find underneath your fingernails as far as the state budget is concerned. I think the only legitimate argument against the raise is that people will think that because it was a pretty good bump there, everybody should get that, even though legislators haven't had it for a long time. But I think I mentioned in the previous meeting that we set a great example for a long time, and nobody followed it. So I guess not raising the pay didn't really have much effect, and raising it probably wouldn't either.
Mr. Shaver?
Mr. Chairman, this is awkward for me. This is a second tour of duty I've had on this panel. And both of them have come at times of recession and budget hardfall. I have high regard for you and all who volunteer their time on this council. But for the credibility of the council and our work as we represent fellow Minnesotans, as these budget cuts come down, and I just can't imagine recommending any increase at this time. And I think the way out of the box is to urge our legislative colleagues in times of plenty to come together in a bipartisan way. I mean, that's the key. That's the only way out of this box. And
I'm not sure I understand you.
The legislative leadership in a bipartisan way has to agree to do this. Otherwise, the good work that you did in the 99 cycle and the 01 cycle just falls on rocky soil.
But whatever we recommend, should we recommend something, is still contingent upon the legislative reaction to that, isn't it?
And, you know, Representative Venus summed up where it's going to go this cycle until the leadership comes together in a bipartisan way on this question. For us to be credible in a time of shortfall, I think we have to go with the governor's recommendation and urge the leadership in a time of plenty to come together in a bipartisan way.
Okay. Further discussion? Ms. Meyerly?
Mr. Chairman, I guess to rebut my esteemed colleague over there, as I look at the charge of this compensation council, we are supposed to not make that hard political decision. We are supposed to look at the numbers, at the market, at what is reasonable, and make a recommendation. I, too, am very troubled by the fact that this council has done its work for many years. 2 years ago, it didn't meet. And those recommendations have been dealt with by the people who are elected and accountable back to the public. And they have not made those hard decisions. They have not kept pace in some cases. And we have found ourselves in holes that have created some problems. I would like to see the council adopt substantially what Mr. Stanek has recommended. I have one thought about the 07 and 08 adjustment for the judiciary, but I think rather than making the statement about coming together in a bipartisan way, if the legislature is not going to listen to the council, then I think we ought to recommend that the council cease to exist, because we don't need another political body making statements on salaries. We're here to exercise some sound judgment, and if our judgment isn't being adhered to, then perhaps the usefulness of the council has reached its extent.
Thank you. Mr. Jones?
I would agree with my colleague. I think I became a part of the council to provide apolitical advice, and I think that we need a recommendation that's representative of the body, and that's our part of the equation. The legislature and others have to make their own decisions, but I think we need to use the best of what this body has offered to make a recommendation.
Ms. Leidig?
I believe that public servants should not be public slaves, so I really believe there should be an increase. But, for example, when I look at legislative increases, if we went with Mr. Stanek's recommendation, and under the current governor's salary, that would be an $8,600 increase, legislative increase that I think would be hard for the public to swallow. I'm wondering if a smaller increase, 30%, 28%, might be something easier and easier for legislators to pass.
I was having the same trouble looking at that, because I really don't know for certain how much time is required, other than it requires a heck of a lot more than most people in the state understand in terms of serving as a legislator. Then I look at some of the comparables here, and it's difficult for me to comprehend why a legislator in Minnesota isn't worth at least as much as they are next door in Wisconsin, where I don't think they do anything. What are they, at 46,000 now? I'm not sure what's right. I'd like to us to find some kind of a formula that would take away ultimately the acute political sensitivity that exists with relation to legislative salaries, and tying it to the governor's seems to me to have some appeal. And if it could be done in a way that's fair and equitable and ultimately does something about the per diem that not too people, many people understand, it'd be a great step forward. And I guess if we were to recommend this, ultimately the legislature in dealing with has to first decide whether the principle of relationship to the governor is right and then what the proper number is. And they probably have a better feel for the time and talent than our group has. That's just a personal observation. Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Swain. Mr. Hubinger, if we were to recommend, then a bill is drafted. Is it referred then to state government finance directly or some other place?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, for the constitutional officers and legislators, that portion would be referred to state government finance. For the members of the judiciary, it would go to the judiciary finance. Each body.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rick Vanilla.
Mr. Chair, would it be in order to amend the Stanek proposal?
Yes.
Well, Mr. Chair, then what I would do is, in building on the Stanek proposal, I would use the Minneapolis CPI for the governor's salary, which I believe is $140,605, which would keep them closer to the Supreme Court, to keep him or her closer to that. I would lower, taking into account Ms. Leidig's concern, the proposal to 30% for legislators, and I would then tie all increases beyond that and not address the judicial branch to the largest union increase in the state, negotiating with the state, which I believe would be AFSCME. And that would be the increases that the judiciary, the executive, and the legislature gets then.
Excuse me, sir. Take me through that again. Governor to 140,605, the legislative amendment to 30?
30%.
And then what?
And then that increases after that, instead of 3% or CPI, which Mr. Stanek said would be tied to the largest union negotiated increase, which would
but
be...
But that amends the judicial recommendation that he made.
It amends his whole recommendation that he made. But I believe it's an order.
Okay, I'm not questioning whether it's an order. I'm just trying to understand what it is you're applying it to. That so that the 140,605 would be the recommendation for 07, and that 08 would be tied to
30% for the legislature.
What would the recommendation for the governor be in 2008? There we go again.
That the governor's salary, the legislative salaries, the judicial salaries would be tied to the AFSCME's.
That would apply to the governor in 08, and it wouldn't necessarily have to be applied to the legislature because that automatically follows at 30%.
Right.
And that the judicial recommendations would be for those 4 years, the AFSCME number.
Yes.
Okay. Is that understood? Is there a second?
That's second. The first one,
I'm sorry? You're seconding the amendment?
Yes. Is it?
I don't think we need a second on a motion to amend.
Okay. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, could I make a
Ms. Marley?
Request that when we start considering these, that we take them in increments, the governor, the legislature, and then the judiciary? Because this is getting to be like a 3D chess game.
Is that acceptable?
Didn't hear her.
That action on the amendment be dealt in increments, beginning with the governor and then... Well, actually, the amendment doesn't alter the... Yes, it does. It alters the legislative from 33 to 30. Mm-hmm. This was your wish, please.
Yes.
Okay, we'll do it that way. All right.
Mr. Swain? Chair, point of order.
Yes, sir.
It's... To me, then, Ms. Mayorle. Good Slovenian name, actually, isn't it? There's supposed to be a J in there. But anyway... when we take it in little pieces, we kind of then get back to the situation where we're at, where, you know, we get helter-skelter and out of sync with each other. And I think it's important that the legislative, executive, and judicial branches be treated somewhat judicially, for lack of a better word, which I don't know if that's going to happen under your proposal, but I guess I'll...
Well, Representative Rigovina, on the other hand, if someone was disposed favorably to the 30 versus the 33 or the 140 versus the 138, but otherwise was comfortable with the balance of the original recommendation, it'd be difficult to express their views. So let's do it incrementally, please.
Mr. Chair, that's fine with me. Could I point again clarification?
Yes, sir.
In our materials and that, were we here to address the legislative and executive branch today, or was the judicial branch on the table also?
Yes. We hadn't heard from the representatives of the judicial community. So
we had
your spreadsheet? No. We hadn't heard last week from them. They were scheduled to appear before us today. They have. I'm not sure I understand your question.
I was just wondering if they were also scheduled by this compensation council to have a recommendation to the full legislature. I wasn't sure of that.
Well, I think our statutory instructions are to deal with statutory, the constitutional, legislative.
I know that.
And the judiciary. I'm missing something.
So am I, paycheck.
Sorry. Representative Bradley.
Chair, I make sure that I got, let me back up to what happens in 05 and 06, Representative Rukavina, with your amendment on the judicial? Does that go with the prior suggestion, or did you change that?
No, they would be tied to whatever
APSME
negotiates. Which I believe is the largest state union.
Can we proceed? Mr. Stabler.
Yes, I have a concern. First, in the material that was provided for us in today's meeting, we got a figure as to what the legislative percentages were, recommendations of 30 and 33%, yet we did not have the number that currently is the relationship between the governor's salary and the legislative salary, which I believe is about 25.9%, which is the a detail that I think is relevant. Secondly, I'm a little concerned about tying in the relationship of the three independent branches of government into a common relationship, common issue. We have structurally in our Constitution supposed to have three distinct parcels of government. And by tying this, I'm thinking that we are eroding the sensitivity of our Constitution in having the independence of our legislature, the government, the governor, and the judges. And I would like to see somehow to carve this percent salary issue that is implied in both of these current amendments to carve that out and deal with that independently as to the legislator's salary as opposed to a percent of the governor's. And I don't know how to do that, so that's...
Not sure it's my purview to tell you how to do it, other than...
I would offer an amendment to remove the salary of the legislators from the discussion for the governor and the judges.
Well, we should deal with this First Amendment, and I guess way of dealing with would be a vote against any kind of legislative percentage. By some background, though, trying to be realistic and at the same time trying to minimize for the future the political sensitivity of dealing with legislative salaries, the suggestion to tie it to a percentage of the governor's salary that was advanced at our first meeting at least intrigued me and others, because in order to make it desirable for people to run for the legislature and to provide some kind of adequate and fair compensation, it struck me, and I think perhaps others, that longer range, to have the number rated to the governor's salary alleviates the necessity in the future of legislators having to vote directly on their own salaries, which the sum is an improvement in advance in terms of fairness.
that's hiding from responsibility,
perhaps. Well, let's deal with this amendment first, and then, depending upon how it comes out, you have an opportunity, sir, to amend further to eliminate the percentage concept, if, in fact, it carries first time around. Let's proceed by voting on.
May I ask, as a point of order, why we didn't have that 25.9% number?
Mr. Chair, and Mr. Stabler, it's just an oversight by staff that we didn't think to do that calculation.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, will we hear again both the amendment, which I think is a larger number than the original motion?
Yes, sir. I will repeat the amendment, and we'll do it sequentially. And Representative Rukavina's amendment first dealt with the salary of the governor, and his recommendation was to change it to $140,605 or whatever the number is, as opposed to the $137,869 in the original motion. As many as support that motion signify by saying aye.
Sir, can we have roll call votes? Is that appropriate?
It is if you wish.
Why don't we see where it goes?
Pardon me?
Sandy is prepared to take the roll if you want to roll call.
Many still support the amendment for $146.05 as opposed to $137.08, whatever it is. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
What's our roll call, please?
Bradley?
Or you can just raise your hand.
Or division.
Well, let's try a division of hands, please. Those in support, raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And 7. It's defeated. Second part of the amendment was to change the legislative number from 33% to 30%. All those in support of that motion, signify by raising your hands, please.
Two.
It went away.
Three. Okay. Opposed? That's defeated. And the third aspect of the motion was to relate judicial salaries and any subsequent change in the governor's salary to the AFSCME adjustment as opposed to the way it was originally stated.
Which was what?
CPI.
Which was CPI for the judiciary in 07 and 08, after the 3% in 05 and 06, and the second year of the governor's in 08.
Thank you.
As many as will support that motion, raise your hands, please. Opposed? Defeated. Okay. So we're back to the original motion. Now, Mr. Stabler, did you have something you wanted to offer in the way of amendment?
I would like to have an amendment to remove the legislative salary as a percent of the governor from that motion.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second it to get it on the table.
Very good. Discussion?
Question?
Ms. Miley?
Would you then be proposing a new number to adjust the legislators' salaries?
Correct.
You're just opposed to an automatic or a
tracking? I am opposed to that tie-up.
Any further discussion? Representative Bradley.
I just want to understand. The proposal was just a one-time to set a number, so it's just a way to pick a number. It wasn't put in casting in policy that percent. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
The proposal to use 33% was just a proposal to set, let's see, I believe that probably would be the 07 number, and it didn't propose to cast that as a continuing policy. I don't know. I'm trying to clarify.
Well, it does change the current situation from a specific number to a percentage of the governor. Okay. And I suppose it would be up to the legislature and subsequent compensation councils to
Okay. I'm sorry.
Decide whether or not this was something worthy of continuing or whether it was a one-timer.
I'm trying to understand the proposal here. Is the proposal here that's the way it would be cast as a policy? Then maybe I misunderstood. It is then, it sounds
Mr.
like.
Chair, my intent was to tie it to the governor's salary on an ongoing basis, although I think as a practical matter, future compensations councils or the legislature would need to look at that. But that was my intent, to tie it to the governor's salary.
Any further discussion? As many as will support the motion, raise your hands, please. Those opposed, similar? That's defeated. All right, we have Mr. Stanek's initial motion on the table. Again, raise the governor's salary from its current to $137,000. What's the odd number, please?
869.
That beginning in 19... I lived too long in the 20th century. I'm back to 19th now. I went back to university a while ago, and then President Udoff said I was the only one around who was there when the territorial legislature in 1849 decided to put the university in Minneapolis and kept the prison. So I was his foil for quite a while. There's some partial excuse for my stumbling then. The beginning in 2007, legislative salaries would be equated to 33% of whatever the governor's salary is at that time, and that the judiciary salaries be increased 3% in January. Well, no, not January. What?
July.
July, 05 and 06, with a corresponding increase related to the CPI in 07 and 08. Is that clear? Understood? Discussion. Senator Orth.
It's Ortman.
I'm sorry. My apologies.
Members, I just wanted to speak in favor of Mr. Stanek's motion here, and I appreciate the motion and the work that went into this. It seems to me that there's never a good year for a public official to raise his or her salary. Never. The economy isn't good enough, or it's too bad, or... I can't think of any circumstances where it might be comfortable or safe, but I appreciate what Mr. Shaver is saying here, because these are difficult financial times. And I have supported the governor in some very difficult belt tightening over the last few years. But I also see that this proposal will not take effect until 2007. A lot can change between now and then. And there will be further consideration by the legislature of those issues. There will be fiscal statements and everything else that we'll have an opportunity to review in the state legislature. The other point I wanted to make is, if we're looking for the bipartisan leadership that is needed to come to bear to make these salary adjustments, a recommendation, a strong recommendation from this council may be the beginning of that discussion. But I can tell you that discussion probably is not likely to occur without a strong recommendation. And salary changes are not likely to occur without a strong recommendation. And so for that reason, I think the first part of the statutory responsibility here outweighs the second part, which is make a recommendation based on the market, based on the relationships, the service that's being provided. And then if you can, also make some recommendation about the current ability to pay, okay. But for that reason, I speak in favor of Mr. Stanek's motion. I think we can show some leadership here and continue the dialogue. We may get shot down later, but we can ask the legislature to look at this issue and begin that dialogue.
Good.
Thank you. Someone else? Yeah. Representative Riccovino.
Mr. Chair, and I wasn't quite sure how the timeline would work here on the recommendation and or under the static motion, you had the governor's the recommendation for the governor's salary to increase in 07, which is and the legislature would be tied to that. But then, if I understood your motion correctly, you also provided for pay increases for the judicial branch in 05 and 06, which to me gets, again, you know, I didn't even hear the lobbyists today for the courts ask for that. So,
I believe that's the
yes, she did.
I don't have a problem with what you're suggesting, other than the fact that you have another two-year hiatus for any increases for judicial or for legislative and executive branch members, and yet we take care of your friends on in the courts. So I'm going to oppose that. I also would like clarification: is the CPI urban index escalator going to be used for the governor and the executive branch after that in your motion?
Mr. Chair.
Danik?
In terms of, I guess, a clarification, I think the intent of the motion was to increase the governor's salary in 07 and then tie the national CPI for 08 to the governor's salary. If our recommendation, if this recommendation were approved, the legislators would move in 07 and then up correspondingly with the governor in 08. As far as the recommendations for the judiciary, I would love to make a recommendation with regard to legislative pay for this year and next year. Unfortunately, the Constitution of the State of Minnesota prohibits that, and I don't think that's within the scope or purview of our responsibilities to change that. So that's the reason for treating the judges different than legislators, because we can't do anything with the legislators for...
until after the next election.
That's
the explanation. For, yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, I'm very well aware of that.
I'm sure. Very well aware of that. Excuse us.
I'm glad my learned friend, I used to be learned in law too, but now I got to be a lawyer to be a judge because of what you did. So.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay, what's your pleasure on this one? You want to take it as a package or piecemeal?
Piecemeal.
Piecemeal. How many piecemeal? Three, four, five. How many as a package? One, two, three, four, five, six. Time for a package. Everybody understand the motion? As many as support the motion, please raise your hands. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Those opposed? One, two, three, four. I think I counted that. One, two, three, four, didn't we, Sandy?
No, five.
What? Try again. Those opposed? Oh, right, five, sorry. Nine to five. Motion carries. Action of this council is then completed. Does anybody else have anything further to come before us?
Yes.
Mr. Stabler.
Yes, I would like to propose a motion that we treat our constitutional officers with some benefit issues as opposed to some salary issues, in that our current legislature has additional benefits for their 50-mile radius. We have a vehicle provided with driver for the governor. I would like to see that our constitutional officers be provided with a vehicle as part of their compensation package if they live in excess of the 50-mile radius that our current legislators do. That a vehicle that would be assigned to them for their use during their serving term.
This is for the constitutional officers.
That is correct.
This within the purview of this council?
Mr. Chair, I understand that the responsibility of the council is to make recommendations regarding salary. In the past, when the council has stepped outside of that narrow purview, it has made recommendations but clearly indicated that it's a separate item, and it's done that in the past.
Okay. Discussion of this proposal? Representative Recovina?
Mr. Stabler. Take it as a friendly amendment to include legislators in there?
No. At 40.5 cents a mile.
So where are we on that?
I'm thinking of a navigator.
Further discussion? I don't hear much support for your proposal, Mr. Stabler. Anything further to come before us? Excuse me.
Are you going to offer your...
you raise it openly, please?
Mr. Chair and members, one of the responsibilities of the council is to make recommendations to the legislature regarding salary ranges for heads of state agencies. There's been a lot of discussion about not making that, making a recommendation about that, but do you want to be silent or do you want to make an affirmative statement that the council recommends no changes to those ranges which are currently set as a percentage of the governor's salary?
You're talking about the 95-85, right, whether or not any suggested change of that number, 95-85, not referring specifically to individual salary.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Shy.
Mr. Chairman, then, as I mean, this is all presumes that the legislature is going to act positively on that. I think it would be very difficult to do that. But having said that, are you saying that the agency heads would then, if we took the governor's salary to $137,869, that certain agency heads would go to 85% of that? And
my understanding is that they, if the governor's salary goes up, then maintaining the 95-85 simply means that whoever the governor is at that time has the discretion to pay agency heads up to that number, but has no obligation to do so. And I understood Mr. Hubinger's question was whether or not there was anything before us that would suggest changing the numbers of 95-85 or the composition of agency heads within those categories.
Mr. Chair, I was referring to the ranges themselves. Does the council want to make a recommendation regarding that, since it's one of your responsibilities?
And we've heard no testimony suggesting that what exists now is out of line, nor did Commissioner Ludeman suggest there was any problem at the present time. Correct, sir?
For the purposes of the action, then, I would move that we take no recommendation on the ranges of the executive branch salaries.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Do you have something, Mr. Stabler?
I had a point of clarification. I was wondering, to the senior officer of our committee, what was the orientation that drove those percentage figures?
Oh, boy. I was around at the time, too, and I can't remember exactly, other than we had such an... Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, there has been reference to a law that exists separately that sets the maximum salary for employees of local governments at 95% of the governor's salary. There was a belief that heads of state agencies ought to be able to make at least that same amount, and that's what drove the 95% figure. Then there are a number of smaller agencies that that exist, and it was just believed appropriate that a 10% discount would be appropriate for those non-cabinet agencies.
Such as Secretary of State and
no.
Well, I'm looking at like the Attorney General of 95 officer, and Secretary of State and the Auditor are all at lesser percentages than the Attorney General, for instance.
They used to each have specific salaries.
Yes.
Were the subject of considerable discussion, debate, and ultimately it evolved into this sort of an arrangement that, based on testimony that was provided to us at the time, seemed to be a sensible way of dealing with this, and that's about as best my recollection is. Firm? And so far, this seems to have been accepted and worked reasonably well. Senator Scheid?
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to put a curse on this legislation, but on the legislation that that's being referred to here, but the salary cap on local government officials is moving along. I mean, repeal of it, outright repeal of that is somewhat moving in, I think, in both bodies, which is interesting, and I don't know. So that may go away. It may not be a handy reference point in the future, but that's what's happening, in case anybody wondered. There's been real serious discussion of that,
yes,
finally.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shy, just clarification then. Would that apply both to the state administrative agencies? That's just the local government, school board, that kind of formula.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Ms. Miley, actually schools are from under that in any case. But, yeah, it would be municipal, local government people.
Okay, anything further to come before us? Not, thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Miley?
I ask that we have a vote on my motion.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Can we get a second?
I think I did second it.
Okay. Moved and seconded that we specifically recommend no action reference to changes in agency head salaries.
Ranges.
Ranges. All those in support of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary? Motion carries. Can I try again to adjourn?
Mr. Chair, do I presume that we have now discharged our duties and there will be no other meeting?
That's correct. Okay. In fact, I think we, by statute, cease to exist.
Can I go back to San Francisco now?
Thank you all.
Just once in a while. Just once in a while. I think so.